Welcome to the Wild and Free podcast, episode 75. I'm Ainsley Arment, and this week we're talking with mama of five, Jane Manka, about homeschooling multiple ages and giving our children permission to make mistakes as they are growing and learning.
Because I definitely used to, in my younger homeschool days, used to like try to force myself to be something that I wasn't, to try to be what I felt to be the best mom to my children and their homeschooling, or to make their homeschooling experience what I thought it should be versus what it was. And they were still learning whether we were cutting up paper and gluing or not.
Plus, we'll share about our new book called Book Club, coming out on May 25th. So grab a cup of coffee and join us on the front porch. Let's get started. I'm no Mother Teresa. I hide in the bathroom and scroll my phone like any other parent who's had it up to her ears with the constant bickering or continual cries for Mom. I found solace in grocery shopping, if only for the solitude. And I have a secret stash of chocolate for the especially hard days, like the best of them. But more than anything, a desire to connect with my kids. The author Tilly Olson wrote, "More than in any other human relationship, overwhelmingly more, motherhood means being instantly interruptible, responsive, responsible. I make breakfast, switch the laundry, and empty the dishwasher, all in the middle of answering a simple text. The recipient will never know it took over an hour to compose. I walk to the bedroom in hopes of getting dressed, but forget and end up folding a mountain of laundry on the bed, reading a book to my daughter, or listening to my son's latest song. I published my first book at the age of 40 and have written a half a dozen more in my head in the shower over the past 12 years. There are books in me that will never be written because the important work of motherhood came first. And if I'm honest, I wouldn't have it any other way. I am not a saint, and I have my moments. But I know, I always know, it's an honor to be my child's person. It's a privilege to be called mom at all. Everything I do feels like an Olympic feat because I'm also a mother of five. But I am everything I am because of being a mother these past 17 years. I have learned from working in the trenches, from hiding in my room on desperate days, and making more mistakes than any mother hopes to commit, that presence over perfection is what really matters. For a child, play is the language of connection. There is no working together to build a relationship, no parental pep talk to forge a bond, no filling of a child's cup merely out of close proximity. According to author and counselor Vince Gauman, play is the language of a child's soul. Any other expression of love might look familiar, but it's not their native tongue. We have the capability to speak our children's language, if only we would listen. There's a temptation to substitute activities that look like play and smell like play, but have nothing to do with it at all. Only play is memorable. Our children cannot be deceived by counterfeits. I'm talking about the kind of play where we join their endeavors. There is nothing more thrilling to a child than for a parent to stop the earth from spinning and crouch down at their level to play. I only need to enter my children's bedrooms and join them in their play for it to feel like Christmas morning to them. Every day, my two little girls, Annie and Millie, beg me to stop whatever I happen to be doing and embody one of the Lego characters they have assigned me. It's usually a strange-looking lizard or a pizza delivery guy with the facial features rubbed off. I use my best lizard voice or delivery driver impression until they stop me in my tracks and correct me. "Mom, a lizard would never talk that way." So I make the required vocal adjustments and do my best improvising to move the plot forward until once again they correct my version of things and set me back on the right course. It's at times like these when I have to remind myself that my girls have not invited me to play for play's sake. They've invited me to connect. And by playing, I'm connecting with them in the best way they know how. May I never grow tired of speaking like a lizard, lest they stop wanting to connect with me at all. We'll hear from Jane Manka in just a moment, But first, we're celebrating an updated edition of our best-selling course called Nature Journal by Kristen Rogers. It's now an 18-week course with video tutorials, printable guides, and step-by-step instructions on how to incorporate nature journaling into your homeschooling. Plus, it comes with a 132-page perfect-bound book in the mail. It's truly one of the great treasures of Wild and Free. Jennifer Pepito spoke with Kristen to talk about how nature journaling has changed and grown in their own home. We have a limited number of spots available for Kristen's Nature Journal course, so don't wait too long to get your access, including 4 bonus lessons and a beautiful book in the mail. To sign up and get 4 new bonus lessons, go to bewildandfree.org/naturejournal.
I've just so loved learning from you. Your paintings, your drawings are such an inspiration as I continue working on my own nature journaling skills. We're doing a little church time outside in people's yard right now. And so Sunday morning I pulled out my nature journal and I journaled the roses on the table while we were sitting there.
And
it's something that really I definitely credit you as being one of the great inspirations of my own journey with nature journaling. And I'm sure that so many Wild and Free families feel the same way. So thank you for that.
Oh, that makes me so happy because it's been such an unexpected gift in my own life and family. So that if I could spread that and people can hold on to it and love it in the same way, then that's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's so important to recognize that nature journaling isn't just for kids or isn't just for school time, but it's really something to feed our own souls as well.
It really is. I feel like anything that helps us to notice and appreciate creation is going to be good for whoever's soul is doing it.
Yeah, I love that. I think that, the thing about homeschooling, the thing about being in nature is that it does help open our eyes to wonder and beauty around us, which is so important for stirring up hope in crazy times.
Absolutely. We need it now.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about how nature journaling has evolved for you as your children have grown.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm kind of hoping that this conversation will ease some hearts, some mama hearts, and some expectations, because nature journaling for my family has been very seasonal. It has super shifted and changed with the age of my kids, depending on our life season, depending on their age. So really, it is a good thing for, I think, parents to understand the benefit and the goodness of it, and then implementing in how it fits in your season of life. So when my kids were little, let me go back to kind of the roots of it is, because it's not just about nature journaling in itself, like getting a picture or a drawing or a painting on the actual paper, even though that is an important piece. But the underlying reason for wanting to nature journal is to nourish these habits of slowing down, observing, appreciating the intricacies of creation, identifying things, digging deeper, marveling, discussing it with each other. So there's all these things that are at the foundation of what's being learned and matured as they're doing this thing that ends up with this great journal of what they've seen and experienced. And so when they were little, it was more about showing them or leading them and inspiring them to slow down and to check out that cool lizard and what's different about that lizard than the one we just saw, or what is so neat about that flower. Like, do you love bright flowers, big ones, little ones? This one's dangerous and this one isn't. And you're when they're little, you're really helping them to notice things and to teach them the art of observation. And so those little years might be a lot of just like pointing things out and helping them to catch that, you know. And then when they're really little and they start drawing and, you know, all their little birds, every single thing they draw looks like a potato. And you're in those beginning years of them learning how to draw. And then you start shaping, you know, like, look at the bill of the bird and see how this one's longer and this one's shorter. Let's try to make that shape into your potato bird. And so there's like these different phases of kind of what you are focusing on. And so in those little years, maybe there's less actual drawing going on. But then once you start seeing some of those habits being taken place, then it's like, okay, now let's get them documented on paper. And you keep the lesson short and you keep the drawing short. And then as they get older, you might be dealing with something different, which I think there's a phase where kids start going through, I don't want a journal because it doesn't look the way I want. And I'm not a good artist, or, you know, you're doing things like that. So I feel like there's an emphasis on different stages, but also a lot of our nature journaling is done in our homeschool nature group. And through the years, we've just really shifted and moved with the kids' response to it. So us as moms saw the value and we wanted to make sure that it was happening. But sometimes we tried, hey, let's see if the kids naturally want to do this. And then sometimes it did. Sometimes it was not happening as much. And we were like, okay, let's as moms decide, let's get all the kids. Because there could be like 26, 28 kids in our nature group with varying ages. So it's like, hey, let's try to let the kids get to our nature spot and tell them to observe whatever they want for 10 to 15 minutes. And then we're all going to sit down and nature journal together. And we did that for a season. And then there was a season where it was like, okay, let's be purposeful about what we're going to study, but, and take pictures, and maybe there's more identifying with field guides going on, but everybody takes that home and does it the next day. So it can really look different. So I think it's good to keep kind of, an open hand in the execution of nature journaling. But it really has moved and looked different through the years.
Yeah, I think that's so important that we recognize that there are seasons in our nature journaling too, and we might have to adapt to new seasons. I think one thing that people don't recognize though is how much science, like a lot of people, even if they're doing nature journaling every week, or even if a nature walk, a nature observation is part of their daily week, they often think they have to add like a science workbook or something to get enough science. What would you say to something like that?
Oh, I think it's so unnecessary. I think there is so much learned in walking and being near and handling nature. And if you have been fostering this idea of observing and then maturing it into having your field guide and identifying things, the amount of things you learn about the thing itself, plants, weather, the way all these things affect each other, how what the animals eat and what they don't, and what protective mechanisms do these plants have that the animals know to stay away from. I mean, the amount of things you are just really naturally learning about creation is actually quite in depth, and it's done in such an enjoyable way where you never need to have that structured textbook type experience attached to it. And I'm sure there's moms that they kind of feel like that's needed so they can check off a box or something in that way. But I definitely love encouraging the idea that that does not have to be a piece of it either. And really just really notice, like take account for all that your kid has learned by just being in nature with these small proddings of observation, identifying, discussing, being slow to notice, all those, like getting moving slow enough to notice is what I mean. And I just think you would be surprised at all they're taking in.
Right. And I love that because Jay Weil, who wrote the Apologia Nature series, he used to say not to do science, formal science, until junior high or high school. I think he said high school. But when you recognize, you know, all the classifying that's going on, all the observation, all the identification, and the even experimentation that's going, you know, a child looks at tadpoles and next week they see they have legs, you know, they make some kind of hypothesis about what they're seeing. All of that is a foundation for any kind of scientific careers they might want to pursue. And I don't think we need to bog them down in the early years with tons of like textbooks type instruction on that.
Absolutely. And even when it comes to nature journaling, like I was saying before, and I know every school, every family has a different emphasis of what they want to make sure is in place. But, you know, I think we need to be careful not to put nature journaling in that category too, to where the child starts feeling negatively about it. Now, obviously with anything, they can go through seasons with how much they enjoy it. But I think really trying to foster this organic love and this goodness that comes from learning in this way compared to a textbook type style, I think will help them long-term sustain this scientific, this art of nature journaling.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for sharing your ideas and encouraging us. It's such a beautiful season to be really enjoying nature, as so many things are changing quickly and new flowers are blooming and then others are kind of withering away for the season. So thanks for sharing, Kristen.
Yes, just get out there and wander with your kids, and it'll be good for your soul and theirs.
Jane Minka of the Salty Tribe Co. on Instagram is a mama of 5 children with 1 on the way. If anyone knows how to juggle multiple ages in homeschooling, it's Jane. She recently sat down with Jennifer Pepito to talk about homeschooling multiple ages and giving our children permission to make mistakes as they are growing and learning. Let's listen in.
Thanks for joining me today, Jane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to chat with you about multi-age learning. You have 5 children, ages 16 down to a toddler?
Yeah. And another one coming in May.
Another one coming in May. And there's a lot of wild and free moms who are in that space of trying to homeschool while they have toddlers underfoot. I get so many emails of people asking, how can I, you know, homeschool my older children while I'm managing the toddlers? And so I'd love to talk about some of your strategies for managing that.
Minute by minute.
Right. I think that's the same for all of us, right?
Yeah. Some days they'll sit and listen to us, listen to a history audio, and sometimes it's just a little bit of chaos. And by a little bit, I mean all kinds of chaos.
Yeah. And that's the nature of that toddler season. I think one of the things that really helped me get through that was family-centered schooling. I really didn't worry about having everybody at a certain grade level. We read together, we talked about what we read, and then they would do, you know, some essay writing or narration or copy work. So it was like everyone was kind of on the same page, and it wasn't all this pressure for me to manage many levels of schooling. How are you managing that with your toddlers?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the easier or simplified that I can make our day, the better things will go. So if we do one main lesson and we pick whether we're doing history or science, and then my older kids, all of their solo work is done by themselves. So as long as we get that one main lesson in, whether we're listening to an audio, watching a video, or reading aloud, then once the toddlers usually start breaking down, the older kids can go off and do a math lesson or something. The older they get, the easier it is for them to just kind of check in with me on how math or reading is going. As long as we've got that main lesson out of the way, that's how we just simplified it as much as we can.
Yeah. And how do you keep those older ones accountable? I think that sometimes families think that they can assign something to an older child, and depending on that child's personality, it may or may not actually be getting done.
Oh, yes. And we have a bunch of different personalities up in here. My eldest is so super responsible. She comes and she's like, I've already done this, this, and this, and I'm done. Like, I didn't have to like assign it. She just does the next lesson of whatever math or reading. My middle child, she was the middle child. She can be on task and sometimes not. So I have to kind of keep her in check, but she does a pretty good job the older she's getting. My next eldest is my son. He won't do anything unless it's written down or told to him. So I definitely have to stay a little more on top of him to make sure he's actually finishing his lessons. But they still just kind of check in with me. I'm kind of like, you know, after it's been an hour, I'm like, all right, who's done with math and reading, come check in with me.
So essentially you have you basically have one lesson that you all do together, kind of a reading or listening, and then everyone's assigned some work, and then you have checkpoints. So they're not off on their own all day on a computer or something. You guys actually check in with each other.
Right.
So how do you decide what to study? Like if you have this one lesson that you guys are all doing, how do you decide what to study? Because I think a lot of families are intimidated by the idea of choosing their own lessons. They're like, I'm just going to buy the grade level curriculum for every single child so we cover all the bases.
Right. In our earlier homeschooling days, I definitely was let me just buy it all in one. And I just always ended up so much more overwhelmed, or just pulling things out that we didn't want to do or that weren't interesting to us. At the beginning of the school year, I asked my kids what they're interested in learning. And we check in midway through the year and see what else they're interested in learning. And I keep a list in a notebook of each child separately and write down all the things they're interested in. And then we kind of see where there's crossover and start there. And of course, I offer in some things that we need to get done, like a history or a science, but they usually already have interest in one of those things or some topic there. And we kind of go with that. We kind of go with like the biggest thing that everyone's interested in. Right now, we're in a history kick and we've been there for months and the kids are just absorbing it so much. So
I love that. And, you know, the freedom that you have then to find out what your children's interests are and pursue them. I think that that is probably part of what is engaging your children.
Right. It makes them, the information stick more. I think when they were younger and I was trying to force like exactly what we should or, you know, quote, should be learning at the age range, I don't think they remember much of it. I think we were all really stressed out, but when we kind of scaled it back a little bit and focused in on topics, they remember it way more because they're absorbed into it too.
Right. Absolutely. I don't know if it was Plato who said education is not the filling of a bucket. Oh, maybe it's William Butler Yeats. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire.
Yes.
And I think there's the power in actually knowing what our kids want to learn, is that we can help light a fire instead of just filling a bucket, you know, where nothing else is absorbed because it's all kind of running out the sides because of disinterest.
Right. The more interested they are in a topic, the more they're going to remember it. I mean, even with things that I remember in public school, the only things that stuck were things my teachers made more interesting or stuff that I was already interested in.
Right. And I think
nothing else stuck.
Yeah, it's so critical that we remember that, because it's really easy to think, oh, I've got to have them on grade level. I've got to have them learning whatever their peers are learning. And we don't realize that their peers are probably learning nothing. Like they may be getting a lot of facts and information, but learning and getting information are two different things.
Right. I think I've learned more being a homeschooling parent than I did being force-fed maybe information, because I could regurgitate anything on a test and then I would immediately forget that information.
Right. And that is another good point, Jane, because I think that there's this other idea that we erroneously have, that we have to teach our children everything they need to learn before they graduate from high school. And if not, we've failed.
Right.
And yet, look at us still learning, you know, as adults, learning how to knit or needlepoint, or learning how to weave, or learning how to milk a goat. There's so many things that we are still learning as adults, learning how to build a website, you know, learning how to market. There's so many things that as adults, we still can keep learning. And yet we limit our children and think that they have to learn everything by grade 12 or age 18.
Right. Yeah. I love seeing my kids seeing us learn, my husband and I. We weren't taught very much about finances. We've learned through trial and error. We got married really young, didn't know anything. But my kids are learning finance through seeing how we made mistakes and how we've given them the information of here's how not to do what we did. I think they like seeing that we're still learning. Even when we're reading through history, I'm like, wow, I didn't know that about that part in history. And they're just like, oh, wow, you didn't know that? I'm like, yeah, we don't know all the things, but we're still learning as we grow, that it's a lifelong journey. It's not like a, all right, this is the end. Now you've learned all the things. No, you're still learning forever.
Yeah, that's really good. And you know what else is interesting about what you're saying right now is the ability that you and your husband had to keep learning. I think so often people feel like, oh, I've made a mistake in this area. I'm just going to quit. I'm not going to try it anymore. And yet you and your husband have figured out a way to make mistakes and push through the embarrassment or whatever of making a mistake and keep growing.
Yeah. We want them to see that mistakes are normal. It's okay. I think my eldest is very, very perfectionistic. I see a lot of my younger self in her. And I'm like, you know, you're going to make mistakes. That's part of life. The point is to learn from it and learn something new and grow out of it instead of just kind of coming down on yourself and feeling awful about it. You kind of just, you learn and you grow and you move forward.
Right. That's so good. I think, you know, as homeschool moms, we often feel that heavy weight of responsibility. Like, oh my goodness, if we don't learn math enough this year, or if we don't read all those books that were on our list, and then we feel like failures. And I think that's probably especially pronounced in the last, you know, season that we've been in, because we're not just having to push through the normal homeschool stressors. We're pushing through major political and physical stressors in the world. And so it's taking an extra measure of perseverance, really, to teach anything in this season.
Yes, because you just want to kind of hold them all close to me, like, let's just sit and pray, because right. It's such a mess out there.
Right. I had a friend who she was born around the same time as me. So basically in the 80s, her mom thought the world was going to end and there was going to be a rapture or something.
Right.
And so she didn't teach them anything. She just wrote read Christian romance novels all day. And then I think, oh my gosh, like if she thought that then, what are we doing now? So it's funny to think about the seasons that people go through and the fact that there are going to be hard seasons in our life where maybe we don't accomplish a lot or it's not our winning homeschool season. But that girl, despite her mom's, you know, lack of teaching, she still became a successful adult. And I think that all of us can weather this, you know, more intense season and give our children the ability, the tools they need to be successful adults.
Right. That's definitely our focus in our homeschool, is providing them with tools. That's why reading is so important. We want that skill to be developed. You can learn anything if you can read. So we just want them to have that skill for sure. And basic math skills are a life survival skill. We want them to have that. And of course, we want their faith to be strong. But you know, just all of that together when everything is crazy. I think that's why my kids are so into history right now, is that they kind of see, you can see how history repeats itself, and it's kind of, they watch this cycle. And I think it's interesting to see my kids see that, be able to pick out those patterns in history, and that they're so into it. So just following their passions.
Oh, that's so good. George Santayana said, those who fail to study history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
And, you know, it's very eye-opening, I think, and sobering for us as parents that we really teach our children what matters. I mean, there are so many things that will serve them in life and are important, and they often get crowded out by, you know, endless lists of facts or kind of non-essential information, especially as we realize how much the world is changing. You know, the things, the core of knowledge that may have been important at one time may not be important in 10 years, but what will be important is knowing how to think and knowing enough history that you can see patterns and maybe even avoid them.
Right. Yeah. Critical thinking. I think this is a critical life skill here. Being able to form their own opinions, to see all the information or receive information and then formulate their own thought process from that, versus being maybe fed information and then just going with that, without holding it up to whether they believe that, whether that goes with their values or morals. So
we'll be back with Jane and Jen in just a moment. But I wanted to tell you about the new Wild and Free book called Book Club, coming out on May 25th. Curated by wild and free mamas all around the world, this full-color illustrated book offers imaginative suggestions for creating themed book clubs for you and your kids. There are hands-on activities, games, food, and decoration ideas inspired by a carefully chosen list of beloved classic and modern novels, as well as discussion questions about plots and themes that engage kids' minds and spark their curiosity. Wild and Free Book Club is filled with fun ideas for each book, including Anne of Green Gables, The Secret Garden, Charlotte's Web, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, Esperanza Rising, and so many others. Wild and Free Book Club is an exciting anthology that will help you inspire your children and instill a lifelong passion for literature and the joy of books. I can't wait for you to experience the magic of gathering with loved ones around books. To pre-order your copy, search wherever books are sold, or go to bewildandfree.org. Now, back to Jane Manka and Jennifer Pepito.
Yeah, I love that. That's really such a critical skill in society at any time to be able to think through things, especially, you know, it's interesting because in our world right now, there is a lot that can be faked. Do you know what I mean? It's really hard to know what is true because anymore you can Photoshop things, you can distort information. It's a really fascinating time to be alive. And if we don't kind of have a really refined ability to interpret information even and to think through, could this be true or could this be kind of Photoshopped a little bit? We're dangerously misled.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think my eldest daughter was talking about this recently. She was like, people online were asking her opinion on politics or religion or anything. And she was like, I like to just say, I don't know, but I'm going to look into it. I just love that she's able to do that, that she feels at least confident enough to be like, I'm not sure, but let me do some research and see what I think about that.
Right. That's interesting. I love that. And I think that's probably a really wise response to teach any of our children. I mean, when we're homeschooling, we have the ability, which is so lovely, to teach our children from our perspective, from our values. But I think giving them that ability to also be a good listener. You know, there was, I think Stephen Covey said, seek first to understand before you would be understood, you know, and so giving people a chance to, instead of just arguing or being dogmatic with people, giving them a chance to explain themselves or like your daughter said, you know, I'll look into that, you know, yeah. having a little softer response would promote a lot of peace in our world, which we need.
I think it's interesting that she didn't just kind of go with the more popular opinion in the group that she was talking to. I was like, okay, we one successful kid so far. we've done okay so far. It was like I'm just proud of her that she was able to do that. But yes,
right. That's smart, very smart. So tell me a little bit more about how you manage your days then with those toddlers. You basically have a main lesson, you send the kids off on their independent work, and then what are the toddlers doing while you're checking in on those older ones?
Causing chaos, making noise and a mess. We're usually doing a snack. I am not a crafts person. I don't know if I'm just not good at them or bits of paper drive me crazy. I do have clay and that's okay. They squish that and play with that. But I try to just keep them as quiet as I can if my older ones are trying to read something serious, but they can go off to another room. Usually it's just free play for the little ones. We don't do any super structure. They're really little. They're 2 and 1. So they're just snacks outside. My son usually will go outside and play with one of the older toddler, and that gets all that energy out. They're boys, and they just really love being outside and digging in the dirt.
Yeah, that's so good. All that sensory exploration is so good for that brain development in the little ones. So I love that. And in some ways, I love that you said, I'm not a crafty mom, because I think that's another thing we need to accept about ourselves. Some moms are going to just love reading out loud to their kids, and other moms are going to love doing crafts with their kids, and other moms are going to want to sit for hours in nature. And while we maybe need to incorporate a little bit of each of those things, we don't have to be experts at everything. It's okay to be the kind of mom that you are.
Right. That is so true. Because I definitely used to, in my younger homeschool days, used to like try to force myself to be something that I wasn't, to try to what I felt to be the best mom to my children and their homeschooling, or to make their homeschooling experience what I thought it should be versus what it was. And they were still learning whether we were cutting up paper and gluing or not. So we do, you know, artful notebooking, and they love doing that. I love watercoloring, so I taught them watercoloring, but my older girls have now learned they love acrylic painting too. I just bought them the supplies, bought them a couple of books, and they have just been going at it without me instructing them specifically on it, because I don't know how to acrylic paint.
To now tell me a little bit though about how you manage media, because I think that for a lot of families, their kids are on, you know, online, they're studying online, or they're connecting with friends online, and it actually cuts into the ability to learn new things. It cuts into the ability to practice music or learn to paint. How do you balance out media and online friendships with doing creative pursuits?
I feel like this has been a trial and error. We're like the generation that's raising kids with technology. And it's just sometimes scary because you want to give them some freedom to make choices, but you also want to like keep them very safe. The internet's a web of just so much information, so much of everything. So much, there's good information out there. There's bad information that you don't want them to get a hold of. But we put time limits on our, we use screen time limits on there. But when they even have the allowance of time, we try to help them through trial and error balance that, how much time they're spending online versus reading in a physical book or a Kindle and being outside. Just, we're basically trying to teach them balance across the board. So where it's not, we've been super, super restrictive with technology and we've been too lax with technology. So we've tried to find a balance in between and then teach them how to self-balance the older they get.
Right. That's so good, Jane. I know it is a work in progress. I feel like we, you know, with some of the kids, we were really strict. And then with some of them, I was probably not strict enough about it. And it is really important to be mindful about it because it does, it limits what I feel like the worst part of it is the more online time you have, sometimes the less creative time you have. And so one of the things I try to talk to my kids about is being producers rather than consumers of culture, you know, people who were culture makers as opposed to just culture, you know, I'm trying to think of a word for it, but yeah. And I think that has helped us actually.
I try to create time that they're bored. I want them to be bored.
Yes, exactly.
It is not terrible to be bored.
Right. I was having my child practice ukulele last night and it wasn't very good practice. And somebody, one of the family members said, well, not everybody has to be musical, but I feel like the, you know, music or painting, these things are what people historically have done when they had some quiet time or when they were bored. And if we don't have that, then we're kind of left to just online life consuming.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I want them to be bored. It helps them create things. That's how anything is ever done.
Right. You think about a lot of the great literature that has come into our world, or the beautiful paintings, amazing compositions of music. And if those people hadn't had some time to just think and dream, that would never have happened. And that's one of the reasons that I try to get my family out in nature a lot, because generally we're out beyond cell service and it gives us time to just think and observe and dream and listen.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, I just so appreciate hearing your thoughts today, Jane, on managing a multi-age homeschool and going deep with our children and passing on information. I appreciate it so much.
Oh, yeah. It was so fun.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Jane. Friends, don't forget about the Nature Journal course from Kristen. Sign up today to receive 4 bonus lessons and a 132-page, full-color, perfect-bound book in the mail. It's a beautiful collector's item, as well as a practical guide. To secure your spot, sign up at bewildandfree.org/naturejournal. Well, that's all the time we have for today, but join us again next week for the Wild and Free podcast.